Today is the fifth Sunday in Lent. The fifth. We are reminded of our death with the tomb sign of Ash Wednesday on our foreheads. I love that we sang this morning, "I Stand Amazed." That is a hymn that Carrie and I both will have sung at our funerals. I stand amazed in the presence. Ashes are a sign of our mortality. They're a sign of our sin. The cross, the beautiful, horrible, ugly place of Jesus' death, is all there on the forehead on Ash Wednesday. The raising of Lazarus, the story this morning, it's the miracle of miracles. It's a photograph of Jesus' life and ministry. It nudges us to be careful with Bible texts. You know, the Bible's so nuanced. Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, tells us, when you pray, go into your closet so no one hears you. So what does Jesus do here? He megaphones his prayer so all can hear him. He doesn't go to the closet. He does just the opposite. There are a lot of voices in this story, just like hers. It's wonderful. Jesus the disciple, Thomas, Martha, Mary, the crowd. But I want you to know there's one person who doesn't speak. Who doesn't speak? Lazarus. Not a word or a peep. He's tight-lipped. Don't we want to hear from Lazarus as much as we want to hear from Jesus? And if honest, many of us would admit we want to hear from Lazarus in this story more than Jesus. Just think of the book, like the book Heaven's for Real. It was a national bestseller. Some little kid dies and preschool, and the dad writes a story about him going to heaven, and it hits the bestseller list and makes millions. This is called heaven tourism. You see, we realize that death is shrouded in mystery. We want to know. We want to know. Mystery's a word that I love, but modern people hate. They despise it. Lazarus gives us some insight. Just give us some insight. What happened in those 4 days? Your body was decomposing. It would rot and smell had begun. I mean, have you ever come across a rotting corpse or a dead animal or even a human being? The smell is poignant. I had a patient die in August, heat wave of 100 degrees plus, a single wide in the middle of God knows where. The trailer had no AC. He had been there for 48 hours. We all had to put cream under our noses to stomach the smell. Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. 4 days. We're told that twice in the story. In the ancient world, the soul was thought to have stayed close to the body for 3 days. This is just their tradition. For 3 days. And then it left. The body decomposed. We read that Lazarus was there 4 days in the tomb. Culturally, this is telling us the soul's gone. In their mind, the soul's just gone. I mean, there are reports of them carrying a coffin, a body in a box out to put into the tomb, and all of a sudden they get a tap on the side of the box. How's that freaking you out? Because they didn't have all the medical ability to determine when death happened. I mean, don't you wish Lazarus could or would speak? Where has he been for 4 days? What did he experience during his time of not being present in this world? What were his frustrations? What were his pleasures? What did he see? Did he see anything? Was there silence or joyful singing or purgatorial cleansing? We hear nothing from Lazarus. And Tennyson, in his great long poem, it's called In Memoriam, chapter 31. It's this long poem. This is what he wrote. When Lazarus left his charnel cave and home to Mary's house returned, was this demanded if he yearned to hear her weeping by his grave? Where wert thou, brother, those 4 days? There lives no record of reply which, telling what it is to die, had surely added praise to praise. From every house the neighbors met, the streets were filled with joyful sound, the solemn gladness even crowned the purple brows of Olivet. Behold a man, Lazarus, raised up by Christ. The rest remaineth unrevealed. He told it not, or something sealed the lips of the evangelist. I love that last section. Behold a man raised up by Christ. The rest remained unrevealed. He told it not, or something sealed the lips of that evangelist. What a poem. Something sealed the lips of John, or sealed the lips of Lazarus. We don't know Lazarus' experience because his and John's lips were glued shut. He told it not. And let me point out, how much faith did Lazarus have in the tomb? How much? This should encourage all of us here. Everyone should be encouraged by that. He is silent in death and he has no faith. He's dead. He was praying for Jesus to call his name. He's dead. He probably was a tad annoyed Jesus called his name. Can't you hear him saying, "Thanks, Lord, now I got to die twice"? He was arguing about his circumstance. He wasn't arguing about his circumstance and decomposition at that point. He's dead. He had no voice. Lazarus is silent. In your experience right now, how much faith do you have? What you're going through? What's happening in your lives? Maybe you have some. Maybe you have a little, like a size of a mustard seed. Maybe none. Lazarus didn't have any. He was dead. But Jesus knew his name, and Jesus knows your name, no matter how little faith you have or no faith you have. He knows you. Jesus has clued the disciples in that Lazarus has died. He tells them this 2 days after they heard the news of Lazarus' sickness. He must have supernaturally understood Lazarus' condition. Jesus talked of death as sleeping. Lazarus has fallen asleep, and Jesus is going to wake him up. And this was misunderstood by everyone present. I mean, if he's sick, sleep is good for him. Let him just rest, Jesus. Don't shake him awake. And so Jesus gets direct, right? Lazarus is dead. So I want to know why the disciples didn't ask Jesus to explain what he meant by waking Lazarus up, because they don't. Thomas has gotten verbose. Let's go and die with Jesus. This Thomas speaks boldly here, but with doubt in the resurrection at the end of the story. Unless Thomas puts his finger in the wounds of Jesus, he will not believe. Thomas is called the twin in church history, and I would like to say we can all relate to his twinness. I made that word up. Twins lived inside of Thomas. There was a Jacob and an Esau. There was a Cain and an Abel. There was faith and there was doubt. I love Thomas. He's one of my heroes. And knowing you, I think you should love him too. He is bold to call all to travel to Lazarus and there die. Let's do it. Let's throw caution to the wind. Let's follow Jesus to the end. Let's follow him to dead Lazarus. Let's go back to the center where the Jews tried to stone you, Jesus. We will take those stones in the head with you. And think of the word stones. I almost wanted to just do a whole spirituality of stones in this service. Jesus is going back to Judea because of Lazarus. And this is where the Jews picked up stones to try to stone him in chapter 10, right before this section, chapter 10, verse 31. The first Christian martyr witness was Stephen, Acts 7, and they dragged him out of the city and they stoned him. His words, last words, were Calvary words, "Lord, don't hold this sin against them." He prays for his enemies. And then we're told he fell asleep. He died. That's the language, though. He fell asleep. Lazarus was sleeping, and Jesus was going to go wake him up here. Jesus has clued the disciples in that Lazarus has died. He talked of death as sleeping, and this was misunderstood by the 12, so he gets direct and says Lazarus is dead. Jesus is directed to the Lazarus tomb, which has this huge stone lodged at the opening. It kept the smell at bay, so Jesus told them to remove the stone. At the triumphal entry, he's told, Jesus, shut your disciples up. We'll look at that passage next week. And he tells the leaders, it won't do a lick of good. It won't do a lick of good. Shut up the disciples, and these stones will chant and sing my praise. And when the woman walked to the tomb on resurrection morning in John 20, the first thing they notice is the stone in front of Jesus' tomb has been rolled away. Jesus doesn't seem to be afraid of stones. Being stoned to death, the stone of a tomb. He knows the story. It took one little stone from the sling of David to topple a giant. It will take the wicked death of Jesus to defeat death itself. And then we have these two sisters, Mary and Martha. They say the exact thing to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, Lazarus would not have died. He wouldn't have died. Jesus' presence means Lazarus would not have died. I think of the song, Give Me Jesus. Give me Jesus. You can have all this world, just give me Jesus. The last verse of that is, when I come to die, when I come to die, when I come to die, give me Jesus. The two sisters just wanted Jesus before their brother died. And how did Jesus respond to each sister? What we see in the passage is the mystery of Jesus' divinity and the mystery of his humanity together here, both fully present in him as the Messiah of the Gospels. Martha's the busy one, busy in the kitchen, busy chasing down Jesus when he comes. She expresses faith that God will give Jesus his request. So Jesus tells her that Lazarus will rise again. He's going to rise. So Martha reaches in her purse and pulls out her theology book. She knows her stuff. Lazarus will rise at the resurrection, at the last day. It's right here in the Westminster Confession. There's no resurrection in history. That was Jewish thought. There is a resurrection at the end of time. It was going to be a group thing. That is why Jesus' resurrection is such a shock. Jesus rose in history never to die again. Lazarus will hop on the death roller coaster for another ride. That's his big bummer. I mean, I'm meeting this afternoon with a 35-year-old family friends that she died. A wonderful woman. She died once. It's terrible, even though she was in her 80s. I want you to know, how does Jesus comfort Mary? I'm going to that home this afternoon to comfort. He makes it, hear this, about himself. How does Jesus comfort Martha, I mean? He makes it about himself with Martha. He doesn't say, Martha, let me pray for you. Jesus doesn't say that. He doesn't say, Martha, your heart's so heavy. He points to all that he is. Jesus gives Martha Jesus. Martha, Martha, we stand here together. Don't you know who I am? I am the resurrection and I am the life, and he who believes in me will live even though they die. Notice the words that Jesus uses in this story. The word is resurrection and the word is life. Jesus has the audacity to stand in the middle of life's greatest crisis, greatest fear, and greatest mystery, which is death. The cemetery, the mind-body mystery. I mean, philosophers have struggled to explain this relationship between the brain and the person. He steps into the midst of separation pain, the future of instability and insecurity. And into this circumstance, Jesus basically tells Martha one word, chill. I'm here. Chill. Now that may seem a bit playful on my part, but I think it's true. Jesus is surrounded by death and a tomb only to throw into deep grief two words, resurrection and life. There's no hug. There's no affirming the real emotions of Martha. He doesn't talk about that. He talks about himself. And here's the thing. Jesus knows what he's going to do. He's already told the disciples that Lazarus is asleep, he's dead, and he was going to wake him up. Why didn't Jesus just tell Martha, Martha, just chill. Give me 3 minutes to walk to the tomb and take care of all of this. But instead, Jesus proclaims he's resurrection. He proclaims he's life. Death is powerless. He's resurrection. He's life. Death removes life, or so it seems. But believe in me, Martha, and have life now and never die. Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Well, Martha is getting the truth of who Jesus is in his divinity at the vulnerable moment of her brother's death. Who can raise the dead? Who can give life in the face of death? God, plain and simple. The great I am, speaking from the burning bush to Moses, is standing before Martha as incarnate deity. That's the mystery. And Martha confesses that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God. Jesus asks about Mary at this point. He says, hey, how's Mary? Where's Mary at? And Martha turns and runs and grabs her sister, and this is a beautiful scene. Mary runs to Jesus, and the crowd of mourners follow her. They think she's headed for the tomb where she's going to mourn. But when what they witness and what we read is she falls at the feet of Jesus in front of this crowd weeping and saying, Lord, if you had been here, Lazarus would not have died. Mary isn't one to care about what people think of her. She didn't try to protect her dignity. Propriety didn't matter. She didn't try to impress. Trivial pursuit question. Where was Mary most comfortable? At the feet of Jesus. At the feet of Jesus. She is the Mary of Luke 10, who let annoyed Martha clunk the pots and pans in the kitchen so she could sit at the feet of Jesus, soaking in his teaching. She's the Mary of John 12, right after this passage, who goes in, well, Martha's serving in the kitchen again. There's a dinner being given in Jesus' honor. Lazarus is present. The disciples are present. Mary took costly perfume. I looked up, you know, what could a costly perfume cost? You know, you can go online and you could buy some perfume for $1.29 million, one bottle. She got costly perfume. And she put it on Jesus' feet. It didn't matter that Judas Iscariot was upset because of her extravagance. Her concern was to give Jesus the praise and love due him. This Jesus who is the resurrection and the life, how comfortable are we? How comfortable are you? How comfortable am I at his feet? Let that set in. Mary, in our Lazarus resurrection story, she weeps at Jesus' feet. And Jesus, who reveals himself as God in the flesh by calling himself life in the face of death and resurrection amidst the decomposition of human flesh, this Jesus reveals his humanity right here. With Martha, it was his deity. He's resurrection and life. Here, it's his humanity. He weeps. It is obvious to those present that Jesus loves Lazarus and Martha and Mary, but we're deceived as our translations miss the point in the passage. Oh, he loves them. Verse 38 and 33 tell us that Jesus was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. I wasn't here last Sunday because of the weekend at Carrie's mom's service and graveside. And I immersed myself in this text this week. I realized how so easy it is to miss this text in my grief. This text. And watch those I love have death, land, and pain and not have the proper response. One commentator describes the words of Jesus in this text, that about Jesus, that he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. He says, let classical Greek teach us something here. What it says is, it's a snorting horse filled with indignation and rage as they prepare to charge the enemy. Jesus is a snorting horse filled with indignation and rage, ready to charge the enemy. Jesus, it tells us, is extremely angry. It is misdirected to interpret this as an internal emotion caused by grief. Martin Luther translated this verse that Jesus was angry in spirit and distressed. Anger burned. Or in a more current German translation, Jesus became angry and in spirit and was disgusted. He was disgusted. You know, Tim Keller in his book, Jesus Encounter, he translates this verse as, Jesus is absolutely furious, he's bellowing with rage, and he is roaring. And then he goes on to talk about how it makes him so upset when he comes to this passage all the time because so many commentators and translations just gloss over that and make it all about some kind of an emotional weeping because of Lazarus. But it wasn't. Why or who or what is Jesus so furious at that such ferocious language is used in this gospel? The whole scene circles the death drain. Jesus is not mad at the mourners. He's not mad at Martha, and he's not mad at Mary. He's not upset with Lazarus. Jesus is roaring in anger. He's snorting like a horse over the enemy of death. The last enemy, Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 15, to be destroyed is death. Death is the enemy of God. Death is the result of sin. Ashes on Ash Wednesday. It's the forehead ashes, the Lenten season that we're in. To not have that conviction and flippantly say, well, look, just get used to it. Everybody has to die. That's not Jesus. It's not what the president said yesterday about Molnar's death. When he said, I'm glad he's dead. It's having an anger that this death is still going on. It's having an anger that people are dying in Iran, that a school building was blown up and children were killed. Jesus would be in an uproar, snorting horse, anger over those things, and he is. Death is the enemy. Jesus gets to the tomb and he calls out, as Kim told us. He calls out, Lazarus, come out. Get out of there. One commentator says, if he wouldn't have said the word Lazarus, all the tombs would have emptied. Jesus knows Lazarus' name. He knows our names, and with Lazarus, he calls us out of our tombs. Our tombs while we're living, and he'll call us out of the tombs at the end of history. He calls us right now out of the tombs of our souls, and may we weep at his feet with Mary. He calls us by name. He knows your name. He knows your circumstance, and he is there to raise you up. But there's a question he puts to Martha in this story that you and I are called to live with our whole lives. It's this simple. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, let's pray.